Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Golf Shake podcast. My name is Ryan Rastall, PGA professional at Howley Hall Golf Club here in sunny Leeds, and it has been a little bit sunnier than the last week, which has been horrible. Matt, you're joining me again. You're just telling me about sitting at the golf club, patio doors open, just having played golf, really nice and warm, yeah?
It's lovely actually. Yeah, the sun's just going down over here in Stowmarket, and I've just literally got off the golf course at 8 o'clock. Just a couple of us flew round, nice little casual knock. Very, very pleasant.
And how did you play?
Do you know what? I played all right actually. I was like 5 over on the front, but 1 over on the back.
Okay.
In fact, to be fair, I was 7 over, got it back to 5. And then bogeyed the last, as you do.
Oh, sour taste in the mouth to finish with.
Yeah, but it's a pokey little par 3, I rate it. I mean, it's the smallest green on the golf course to hit. You just can't afford to miss it. There's no miss left. There's no miss right. It's hit the green or go home, basically.
Very good. So those of you that are listening will see that the title of this podcast, we've got a very special interview coming up in a few minutes. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about what's gone on in the last 7 days in the world of golf. So let's start with the PGA Tour, Matt, because it's really starting to hot up now this time of year in the run-in for the FedEx Cup. And this week's Wyndham Championship was the last chance for a lot of the players to kind of squeeze in that top 70 and give themselves a chance of making some serious cash towards the end of the season. Did you watch much of this?
No.
In a word.
No, okay. I'll be honest, right? I actually watched so much of the Ladies Scottish Open that I kind of felt like by the time that had finished, I felt like I was pretty golfed out. So I didn't watch any PGA Tour this week.
I was a bit the same as well. Watch lots of the Ladies Scottish Open purely because, you know, those of you that listen to the podcast regularly will know we absolutely loved Dundonald Links, and obviously it was played there. There was some interest from me just watching how the ladies get round Dundonald and how they play it, and my God, did they play it well. We'll come to that in a second. But Wyndham Championship, Lucas Glover, the winner. Really good tournament. It's just disappointing to see both Adam Scott and Justin Thomas. I don't know if you saw that shot you hit into the last there. I mean,
I mean, obviously I keep up to date with it on social media. So I saw what had happened. I saw that he missed the top 70 by a shot in theory, Justin Thomas. This is, I actually think this is probably the best thing for him. He can now kind of switch off for a few weeks. I think reset, reassess. I'm sure I've never been in that position, so I wouldn't know, but I can only imagine that if you're fighting for that constantly, he's adding tournaments to his schedule to try and get that number that he needs to get to make the playoffs, putting yourself under intense pressure every week to do it. I kind of feel like he's probably the last thing he needs would have been to kind of make it and then go again next week. I feel like the rest would do the guy a world of good, to be honest, and come back stronger at the start of the following season.
But do you think that's his hopes of getting the Ryder Cup team over, or do you think
You never know, but if it was me, I wouldn't pick him. I wouldn't pick him. That's not because I don't think that he could step up and do a job still, because I think if you've got that quality, and obviously even if he was going to the Ryder Cup, you would still have that rest. I just feel like when you've got so many players that are playing well and that are, you know, full with confidence at the moment, I almost feel like you don't need to take that gamble.
Fair enough.
That would be my stance on it, to be honest. As much, and I love JT, love him. And I'm sure that we'll see a better JT next year.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, he's obviously got the quality because he's playing some really nice golf towards the end of his round as well. So, on that Ryder Cup theme, we obviously had a LIV tournament this week as well, which has hit the headlines for a couple of reasons, but the main one is how Bryson DeChambeau played over the 3 days, 68, 61, 58, which is unbelievable.
It's absolutely incredible, that, by the way. Absolutely
119 incredible shots for his last two rounds. Now, I teach people who can't do that in one round, so that is seriously, seriously impressive golf, isn't it?
It is impressive. I mean, look, obviously, I didn't watch it. I've seen the putt that you hold to shoot the 58. I don't know what's more impressive, shooting 58 or shooting 58 the day after you've shot 61.
Well, and he coming off the golf course having shot 61 and saying, I can go under 60 round here. And yeah, it's literally unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I know he said things in the past, doesn't he? That's come back to bite him a little bit.
Yeah.
At least he's followed through with this one. Yeah, I mean, look, like you say, you could get a group of four handicappers and put them in a scramble, and they wouldn't shoot 58 gross, having four attempts at every shot.
Oh no way! He just hold. Every single putt I saw him hit just went in. And he had a bogey in that 58 as well.
He did, yeah, that was a bogey in it.
I mean, it was just stunning and probably the best two-round stretch of golf that anyone's put together, certainly that I can remember. That is seriously impressive. Now, yeah, Liv, he's obviously in the conversation now whether he should be in the mix for the Ryder Cup team, along with Koepka, along with DJ, along with Patrick Reed, people like that who are performing pretty steadily week in, week out on LIV, but also when they've played in the majors, done quite well as well. So where do you stand on that?
Well, I'll be honest, if it was me picking, I'd maybe pick one of those guys. And that would be Brooks Koepka. Bryson, I think, is obviously, you know, you can't overlook the fact that he's just had an incredible couple of days or 3 days, but it kind of feels like, you know, you've almost got to be careful. Is that all it's going to be? You know, like if he goes next, I don't know when the next LIV event is.
I think he's done all right in the majors as well, hasn't he, to be fair?
To be fair, he has. I mean, look, if he was in the automatic qualification spots, you wouldn't have an issue taking him, would you? That's the thing, I think.
But, I mean, he's going to be very hard for him to do that, playing on LIV. Yeah. That's the thing. So,
yeah,
whether anything changes because of that, I guess Brooks is still in there at the moment. So,
I think my only concern with Bryson is who would you pair him with? That's the thing.
Well, if I'm an American player, I'd put my hand up straight away to play with him. Flipping it.
Good job.
Oh my god, he bombs it and holds every putt. What more do you want?
Yeah, true, true. That just puts your iron game under intense pressure, though.
Well, maybe, yeah, potentially. But yeah, I mean, yeah. He would be on the plane. Yeah,
we definitely should have a Ryder Cup special maybe in the next week or two.
Yeah, I think so. Particularly as we've got probably 4 weeks ish before the teams line up. So it would be good to kind of maybe speculate as to who we think might get in and see.
53 days.
He's right. Yeah.
53 days it is, Ryan.
It's obviously crunch time for everyone, not just the American team, but the European team as well. There's still a lot of spots there that can be filled with the picks that Donald's got as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's this part of the year now, even though all the majors are finished, it feels like it's the end of the season. There's lots to go. I mean, we've got the FedEx Cup running now, starting this week with the St. Jude, and then you know, obviously the run in to the end of the season there, but then we've obviously got the Race to Dubai finishing. We've got the Ryder Cup. You know, there's still plenty to go at. So, yeah, the men's game looking good, and hopefully the European Tour will play sometime again soon because it feels like all those guys have had about a month off. So, yeah, it's be nice to see them play some golf again. But let's talk about the Women's Scottish Open. So, Dundonald obviously played host to that again. I was lucky enough to go up to that last year. Couldn't go the last few days, but it's an amazing venue, as you well know. And many of the people that listen to this will have heard us wax lyrical about Dundonald and how fantastic we think it is. But just how impressive was to back up winning your first major championship at the Evian to then go to a completely different style of golf course up on the Ayrshire coast and dominate the tournament pretty much from start to finish there as well and win again. How good was that from Celine Boutier?
It's so impressive. It's so impressive. Like you say, in particular, that switch from style of play or style of course, should I say. And it was a very heavy leaderboard as well. It wasn't as if, she was just up there on her own. There was big, big players in and around. I thought the, at one point, there's the Swedish girls, Maja Stark and Lynn Grant. I thought those girls were gonna maybe give her a run for money. Lynn Grant faded a little bit, didn't she, over the weekend? But Maya Stark, couple of rounds in the 70s over the weekend, not normally going to get it done. But yeah, I mean, look, absolute credit to Céline Boutier for going. I mean, winning's hard. Doing it back to back is.
I'm gutted. I didn't put any money on. I did the first week and won 270 quid, I think. And then this week, I don't know why I didn't put money on her again, because she finished so well at Dundonald last year as well, and didn't do that. So, yeah, and, you know, who knows? This week, you know, we're looking ahead to yet another major championship, and do you think she could do 3 weeks in a row?
I mean, that's a big ask. But this game's stupid, isn't it? You can never say never, really.
A completely different style of golf course again in Walton Heath, going down there once you are playing Dundonald and then the Evian. I mean, there couldn't be three more polar opposite golf courses there, really. But
no.
Yeah, I mean, who's to say? She's obviously playing well. She's hitting the ball great. Having watched her last year at Dundonald, was so impressed with particularly how she hits fairway woods and hybrids off the ground. I think it's the most impressive I've ever seen, I think, anybody. But her short game's great. She puts fantastically well. And yeah, she's obviously very confident. So who's to say she won't do the same again? But you've got to look as well at, you know, the likes of Nelly Korda. Hopefully someone like Georgia Hall will start playing well again. Charlie Hull, for those of us who have got some home favourites, we want her to do well too. But yeah, I mean, you've got to look at the kind of upper echelons of women's golf, because it tends to be those players that kind of jump to the top. Although we got a bit of a surprise winner last year in Ashley Buhai at Muirfield, so you never know.
I'll tell you who really impressed me after a disastrous first round last week, who I think could do well this week, is Minji Lee.
Okay.
She opened with a round of 80 up at Dundonald Links, and then followed that out with 66, 68, 66 to finish in a tie for 13th.
That's pretty damn good.
I mean, you look down and you're not going to find anyone else, I think, that made the cut that shot in the 80s on the first.
No, you probably
in the
not.
First couple of days. So yeah,
she's seriously talented as well.
Yeah, you know, there's obviously. I mean, actually, you've got to look quite a way down to find anyone. I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, handful of people that shot in the 80s. So to shoot 80 in the first round and pull it back like that is super impressive. So just keep your eye on her next week.
Is that who your money's on?
Look, I'm super impressed. Every time I see them play the Swedish girls, Maya Stark and Lynn Grant. As I said, I know Lynn Grant faded over the weekend, but they always look super impressive to me. And Maya Stark just seems to have that gritty determination about her.
I quite like that. And you know, another player who's like that is Brooke Henderson, and I'd quite like to see her do well. She did okay at the Evian and then kind of didn't really do much, you know, towards the end. But Leona Maguire is another player that is starting to sort of rub shoulders with the biggest players in the world as well, and seems to be performing quite well with some consistency. So it'd be good to see her go well. But yeah, I mean, it is a difficult one to call, but I'm probably going to put some money each way on Céline, I think, this week.
I don't blame
Great you. Great to see her do it again.
Minji Lee for me. That's my pick.
Fair enough. Okay. You heard it here first, guys. So I don't know whether Céline's going to win. I don't know. I'd like to see it. Yeah, let's go for it. Let's go.
3 weeks in a row is a big ask, isn't it?
Why not? Get to world number one as well. That would be impressive. Right, so that's wrapped up kind of a little bit of what's gone on and what's going on. And the main feature of the podcast today is we've got a special guest. So Mr. Chris Hollins, many of you will have seen some of his work before, but we caught up with him to have a bit of a chat about the latest series of Golf's Greatest Holes. So him and Paul McGinley got together again for the second series, following on from the first that was so popular. Shows on Sky Sports. So the first series focused on Ireland and Northern Ireland and travelling around there and playing some of the greatest holes around Ireland and Northern Ireland. And this time we're in Portugal. Okay, so I had a bit of a chat with Chris. We chatted all things golf as well as a bit of Strictly as well. So here it is, my interview this week with Chris.
Chris, thank you so much for joining me today. For those people who will recognise you from the BBC and the time when you were the basically the sports correspondent at BBC Breakfast, a lot of people you will know, but also those of you that are like me and have that guilty pleasure during the winter of watching lots and lots of Strictly will know you from that as well. I'm a massive Strictly closet super fan, really. So very, very into that, particularly during these long winter months when we're not playing much golf. A little bit of sparkle on the dance floor there on a Saturday night. And those of you that watch it avidly will know that you and the lovely Ola Jordan won the show back in 2009. But also, a lot of you won't know that you were a first-class cricketer as well, Chris, will they?
No, exactly. I don't know what's the order of importance. I think indeed. Strictly is always number one, isn't it, to most people? But yeah, well, 14 years ago. Can you believe it? 14 crazy. Years ago.
Crazy, yeah. Isn't it? But yeah, I mean, cricket, we've just had the Ashes series. What did you make of that? Did you watch a lot?
Oh, I watched as much as I could. I went to Lord's for one day and then I watched quite a bit on the telly. It really delivered, didn't it? We're all sports mad and we watched the Open, which didn't quite deliver. I mean, we got a great champion, no taking away from that, but we didn't have any drama. Whereas if you think for five test matches, you just didn't know where it was going and every day there was something on it. The skill level was incredible. And the other thing about it, we had contrasting styles. So if someone was writing a movie about how an Ashes series should be played out, that was it. So unbelievable. And I just hope it's encouraged the next generation of kids to go and play cricket. Because for me, it was Ian Botham back in 1981 that made me play. So you're just hoping that happens too.
Yeah, maybe the next Stuart Broad steaming in and taking some wickets. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, other than you were saying about writing the script, I think they would have maybe not written in the English weather that destroyed the test at Old Trafford. But yeah, we'll let them off. But yeah, I mean, like I say, you've obviously been doing lots and lots, and like you say, Strictly's top of the list. But yeah, we're here today to talk about the latest series of golf's greatest holes. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the game of golf, but also then how golf's greatest holes came about.
Well, playing golf was probably with my dad and mates. Playing cricket, playing all sports, there was very little time for golf. And then occasionally someone said, oh, I'm going to go and play golf. And you think, oh my goodness. And you scramble around, get a set of clubs from someone, your dad or something, and then go and have a hack around. But I only probably started playing golf properly probably in my late 20s. I was working with BBC and I was working shift work, which meant I suddenly found myself having the afternoon off, or you know, Wednesday afternoon, which is no use to man nor beast. All your mates are working. So I used to suddenly start playing a bit of golf with someone else who had the shift off. And it's an amazing bug. And I got into it, then started covering golf for the BBC. And golf's greatest holes is probably a reflection of how I feel about the game. You know, I want to get competitive and I really want to have a good match. But quite frankly, it's how that game makes you feel. So you walk around, fresh air, sunshine, rain, whatever, alongside an ocean or in a beautiful wooded golf course, and just have a giggle with your mates. And that's what I wanted to reflect in the program. And what better way of doing it than playing the very best holes at the very best golf courses in the world?
Absolutely. And series one, you were in Ireland and Northern Ireland, weren't you? And we have to say as well that the other person involved in this is none other than Mr. Paul McGinley. So he's a good person for you to be playing these golf holes with, isn't he?
Yeah, well, it's a bit like dancing. I danced with the world champion, Ola Jordan, who was amazing, and it made you feel good and made you look good. I'm playing with a former Ryder Cup captain and a Ryder Cup player, and they are fantastic. He is a great player, number one. And number two, he's just a great guy to be with, tells great stories, has a good sense of humour, doesn't let me get away with anything. And I think that's what people like watching. And so there is not a lot that Paul doesn't know about a game of golf or about a golf course. Whether he's played it before or whether he hasn't played it before, he seems to just get it very quickly, what the architect's looking for, what the challenge of the golf course is. And he manages to tell that really well on television.
Absolutely. I mean, having the insight of someone who's played golf at the highest level like that, and is, you know, they're looking at different things on a golf course than we are, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? They're picking up on things that we wouldn't necessarily see, and probably hitting it in places that we wouldn't necessarily get to either.
You say us, you're a professional. So I would say mere mortals, yeah.
I'm not on Paul Finley's level, though, yeah. So,
well, that's the other thing. It's all your levels, isn't it? So, I mean, what do I play off? 6 or 7. So most people go, oh, you're good. And then I say to you, oh, you're a scratch golfer, you're good. And then all of a sudden you end up playing with, you know, Paul McGinley or whoever it is, and they have been +3 or +4, whatever it is. And it is a different game. But the great thing about golf, which I know you get and which I really try to push, is that there's no other sport where you're playing against. I mean, I've played with Rory McIlroy, and we've played the same hole, and he can give you a couple of shots a hole, and you can be able to play the world's best on the same golf course. You go and try and do that at cricket. All right, I'm going to go, you know, have a bat, or someone, a club cricketer, opens a batting against Stuart Broad. Well, good luck. That's not going to be much fun. No, you're going to get out, and you're not going to get it, right? And so that is the magic thing about golf. Yes, they see playing the hole differently. That's great when they say, oh, yeah, it's, you know, when you play with someone like Rory, oh, yeah, it's about 160, 170. I'll probably hit a 9-iron here. And you think, oh, okay, that's not the game I was playing. Or they say, you know, I'm going to shape it around this place. Or, you know, things like I'm going to hold it into the wind by drawing it into a left to right wind. And you think, okay. Good. Well, that's great. But there are little bits and pieces you can pick up along the way that mere mortals can do.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And if, you know, if you can pick up one tip that's going to help you, you know, in your game of golf, then absolutely picking the brains of the best players in the world. And you just said Rory there. I mean, there aren't many better ball strikers around than him either. Obviously, the way him and Paul play is very, very different. You know, they're both elite level performers, but yeah, they're very different games that they play, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Paul will plot his way round, but he likes taking risks. What he has got, which, you know, is better than, you know, again, which you'll realise, and most people that have ever watched professional golf, their short game is just breathtaking. Whereas I'm thinking, oh, I've missed the green here. Uh-huh. I'm staring a bogey, double bogey. They're thinking, I'll get up and down here, or I might chip this in for a birdie. And you're thinking, oh, you know, that's fantastic. I was thinking of just dribbling it out of this grass and getting it on the deck. But, you know, every player is different. Every swing is different. But what's great is the golf course is the same for where, you know, so Paul went back to golf courses on this program that he hadn't played for 20 years, 25 years. And they're the same mostly. And the challenge is the same mostly. Yeah, we've got different equipment, but when the breeze is up, the sun's out, the greens are hard, it, you know, it's still the same challenge.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you say, though, those courses that you go back to, and whether it's 20 years since your last visit or last year, I mean, they're great golf courses, and they present very, very good challenges. And so let's kind of go through the order in which you did the series, if you like, right? So you started off in, well, in the Algarve, really, I suppose, pretty close to Faro, isn't it? It's Castro Marim that you started, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, goodness. We started various places because obviously what you see on television is not necessarily what you, how the plan was.
Right, okay. Fine.
Yeah, so the series starts in the Algarve. And so, yeah, we went, the thing is, I think I know a lot about golf, and I think I know a lot about golf, but I didn't realize how much golf there was in the Algarve and how much quality golf there was in the Algarve. So that really did blow me away that, you know, you suddenly get in your car and I say, oh, how far have we got to go? Oh, 20 minutes. Okay. You play that hole. Where have we got to go now? Oh, it's another 20 minutes. And then, oh, it's 5 minutes down the road. Oh, actually, they've got two courses. And you think, oh, my goodness. You know, you could spend a month there and not play the same course. So, I mean, it is really, really impressive. And the other thing about the Algarve, which I thank my lucky stars for, is the weather. It was breathtaking. You know, in October, I think we filmed, and it was sun shining every single day. Gorgeous, bright sunshine, bright blue skies, especially in the Algarve. We had a bit of cloud mist up in the north, but in the Algarve, it was just like, oh, God, this is great. Just I've booked it. I booked my tee off time, and I've booked the weather. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only one thing really in a round of golf that can spoil it, isn't it, is bad weather. But yeah, like you say, when you get to the Algarve, you're not guaranteed it, but it's pretty high chance that you're going to get a decent day, isn't it? So, but I mean,
someone said it's about 330 days of sunshine or something, yeah, you know, in the 300s. It's crazy.
Rather than the 30 that we get here, yeah. I've been lucky. I've played lots of golf in the Algarve. Parents have had a place over there for years, and I go all the time, take the family there on holiday. There's golf courses you've played in this series I've never even heard of, and I've been going there probably 20 odd years, I think. So like you say, the sort of depth in quality is huge as well, and that there's golf courses on here, like I said before, that I've never played, never been to, and they're almost like hidden gems, I suppose, a few of them, aren't they, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you've got the big names that everybody's heard of, but yeah, you'll turn a corner. I mean, there's, for example, Castromarum was one of those where, you ask loads of people, and they go, Castromarum, never heard of it. Yeah, and you say, okay, am I making a mistake? Should I be going up there? Did I misread something? You go up there. I mean, obviously, you're nearly very, very close to Spain, and it's a beautiful golf course, you know, really great fun. I mean, it feels like you're nowhere near the Algarve because it's just totally and utterly different. Great course, great fun, great people down there, the O'Connor family down there. Really good fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then you're thinking, oh, I wish I'd allowed more time now, because when you're filming, you just allow yourself no breathing space whatsoever. Other places that, you know, you discover, you know, you've got, I don't know, there's loads of places, like Pinecliffs, for example, is hilarious. Because it's not really a golf resort. It's a holiday resort and someone says, oh, it's a little 9-hole course, and you're picturing pitch and putt, aren't you? Or something like that. And you turn up, and there are 9 breathtaking holes, beautifully kept, really good stuff. And then you come to this par 3, which is just, not a joke, but it's just hilarious. You turn up, and it's a par 3, just under 200 yards. Over what could only describe the Grand Canyon with the ocean on your left. And you think, wow, you know, people will be talking about this, you know, all their lives if they knew about it. And those are the things that surprise me.
Yeah, and I think that's the great thing about this series, really, is that it does shed light on some of those golf courses and particularly holes that many people won't have ever seen before. And, you know, a lot of people go on those kind of package trips when they go to Portugal, and they're kind of almost forced into certain courses all the time. So it's those that become very popular, but you've kind of gone off the beaten track a little bit here and experienced some of, in inverted commas, the real Algarve, really, different golf courses that maybe don't kind of fit that model of, like you said, some of the traditional Algarve type golf courses, but also offer fantastic, well, one, value for money, but two, breathtaking views, yeah, and golfing quality as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some of the bigger names will cost a bit more money, but it doesn't mean that you've got to fork out a fortune to have 3 days of golf. You can sort of make it all around the big one. But the whole of Portugal, there's some amazing golf courses. But if you've only got 3 days, you know, the Algarve is pretty sensational because you're not going to spend it mostly in a minibus, you know, trying to get from one course to the next. You're going to be out playing. But what I would suggest is that you make sure you book a tee off time because they are packed, absolutely packed.
Yeah, they're very, very busy. And, you know, it's because that, one, they're so good, and two, the weather's great, isn't it? So, and there's lots and lots of us Brits over there all the time, isn't there? And away from the golf courses, you go into the towns and the resorts, and it's just full of Brits, isn't it? Having a great time on holiday or playing golf. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where you stayed when you were over there. Were you kind of based anywhere particularly? Or
we stayed everywhere. We were all over the shop. I think, you know, we did the Airbnb thing, then we stayed in hotels. I mean, I wouldn't suggest that anybody doing the trip that we did, because it was just manic. But, you know, if you were going to do my trip, in a leisurely fashion, you'd be there for a month because you'd want to play all the courses. But there's nothing better than having played golf, good or bad, and then you sort of go for a little drink in town, maybe in Kintyre, so you go in there and you can have a pizza and a pint, or you can have something a little bit better, a little bit more sophisticated if you want, and just talking rubbish. I just love that with your mates, just talking rubbish. Or if you're there with your wife or partner, it's great. It's fantastic. It's just everything that you could wish for a little break.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of later on the series, you get up to Northern Portugal, which is somewhere I've never been and not been lucky enough to play up there around the kind of Lisbon and even north of there when you get to like Westcliffs and places like that. So tell us a little bit, those of us that kind of, when we go to Portugal, all we think about is the Algarve. There's definitely more to Portugal than just that, isn't there?
Yeah, and it isn't a million miles away. You know, it's, if you want to do it, it's only a couple of hours in the car. I know that's quite a big trip for a few days, but if you get up there, it really is worth the trip. We're talking about the likes of, where did we go? We went Westcliffs, Praia del Rei, up that way, Quinta da Marina, Oitavas Dunes. They are what I would say are the really different style of course, which is what we wanted to do, because we could have spent the whole series shooting lovely sunny golf courses in sunshine in shirt sleeves going around the Algarve. But you go up to Westcliffs and Praia del Rei and Oitavas Dunes, and suddenly you've got a totally different experience, really heavy winds, much more linksy. And then you sort of go into town with the likes of Estoril, you can go in and have a bit of city life, get into Lisbon for a few drinks and have a bit of city life, which I think was really good. And then if you want something really different, which is probably one of my favourite trips, was going to Troia and the new course, which everybody's talking about, Comporta Dunes, which is probably a 45-minute journey from Lisbon, depending whether you take the ferry or the drive. It is probably the undiscovered part of Portugal and probably the next destination for Portuguese golf or just leisure time. It's very, very beautiful, very untouched, so to speak. And the two courses there, Troia and Comporta Dunes, will take your breath away. They really will.
Wow. So would you say you have a favourite from the series?
From Portugal?
Yeah. Is there any golf kind of just... You've said about being blown away there. Is there any that you just kind of...
Yeah, I mean, Troia and Comporta Dunes, because we'd spent so much time in the Algarve, it was shirt sleeve order, just play. And then suddenly you come to Troia and Comporta Dunes where, Comporta Dunes had never been played on. So we were the first people to play on it.
Wow.
And experience one of the holes, which I'd never done before. So there's no tee boxes, no... yardages. It was a little bit wild and woolly in some areas because we were the first people on it, and you've probably read in the press how well it's been received recently. Because it's opening in October. It is going to be an incredible location. And then just up the road, Troia, which was funny enough the first place Paul had ever played golf in Portugal, that is an unbelievable golf course, really testing. So those two are really difficult to beat. But again, what do you like? Do you like a little leisurely walk around with sunshine on your back? And, if it's that, then, you can't get much better than the Quinta do Lago South, really. But, yeah, the list goes on. The list goes on.
Yeah, you've really kind of ticked off a lot on the list as well, haven't you, during this series?
Yeah.
And there are lots of different styles of golf course as well. It's not as one-dimensional as people think in Portugal, is it? There are lots of different types of course that you play as well, aren't there? Yes, there are a lot that are coastal and kind of quite undulating and almost like some of those Spanish courses that you play. But then there are also some that are very tree-lined and very difficult and represent a completely different test as well. And I suppose when you're playing with someone like Paul, it must be great watching how someone like that takes on different styles of golf course as well.
Yeah, exactly. He taught me the stinger and all that sort of thing. But yeah, he the way he attacks some holes and defends others, that's, you know, that's interesting. I mean, it does help if you can control the ball flight and know what you're doing. But yeah, how he attacks holes, you know, he likes to take risks if the reward is big enough. You know, but they also make mistakes, but it's way they, I think that's the most impressive thing about a professional golfer is how they recover from their mistakes. They don't make it even worse. Don't compound that injury, that bad shot by playing another bad shot or taking unnecessary risk out of rough or anything. They'll bat themselves to get up and down to save par or just, you know, make that bogey. That's the really impressive stuff.
And were there any courses?
Paul's putting on the blooming trip was amazing. Every time I thought I was going to win a hole, he held a 10, 15 footer. That killed me.
Well, he's done it on the biggest stage ever, hasn't he? In front of everyone at the belt. So, I mean, in Portugal, yeah. It's quite easy. But yeah, were there any courses that he sort of remarked upon when you were there and sort of said, wow, this is impressive? Or was there kind of a nostalgia moment where he went back to a golf course? And
Obviously, Troyer, which played a big part in his career. So, you know, he mastered or managed to get around Troyer when he was a young lad and thought, actually, I can do this. I can play this game. Penalonga was one we went back to, which was a great golf course where I managed to find myself under a bridge. But yeah, he loved going back there. But I think places like the one that he had to back himself was Quinta del Lago North. So that was the last hole we played on the series. And he said, he kept going on about, we must play this. And I played it. And I was like, okay. And then I didn't realize why. It's because he'd helped redesign it. So he was saying, so I was thinking, well, you better back yourself here. It's better be impressive. Otherwise, you're going to let yourself down. But it did everything that it should have done, because what he doesn't want to do is make it impossible. He wants to encourage players to go for it. And if you go for it, you get rewarded with a birdie or a par. And if you play a bad shot, you're going to get a bogey. But what he doesn't want to do is, you know, not encourage people to go for it. And I think, you know, all of his holes that he has designed, they're very pleasing on the eye and very encouraging. We ticked it. It ticked the box.
Very good. And have you got any plans to get over there anytime soon yourself and play any more golf?
Oh, I'd love to. I'm a member at the Oxfordshire and I've played the back nine once in the last 3 years. So I have not played much golf at all. The idea of going to Portugal sounds fantastic for a leisurely trip, but we're too busy trying to, I suppose, organise the next series.
Can you give us any spoilers as to what's going on there?
Well, it's somewhere in the world. No, it is. Well, we've got lots. The States is obviously one place where everybody wants us to go. South Africa is a place that we really are hoping to get to. And there's another place called the United Kingdom, yes. Which I don't know whether you've heard of. They've got some great courses too. Yeah. So, and that's the other thing. You think there are some amazing places in our own back garden. So we've got to try and do that.
Yeah, I mean, this could almost be a lifelong project for you, Chris, to be fair, couldn't it?
I mean, I'd love it to be, yeah. All I need is some money.
That's right. Yes, indeed, yeah. But yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. And tell us, finally, where can we watch the latest series?
Well, if you have Sky Sports, hopefully you do, if you're golf nuts, it's on Sky Sports. The series has just finished. The second one in Portugal, but you can get it on Sky Sports on demand. And there you watch it. You can watch it back to back, get a bottle of wine and watch both series, all 12, or actually 13 episodes back to back. And you'll have a good afternoon stroke evening.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I recommend you do that as well. I've watched all the second series and I'm about halfway through the first at the moment, but yeah, some of the golf courses over in Ireland are amazing as well, aren't they? It's somewhere that I have played a little bit, but nowhere near as much as I should have done.
Yeah, there's another place where you think you know all the golf courses and you think you know everything, and then all of a sudden Paul will say, have you gone over there? And you think, oh wow, look at this place. I mean, like Killarney, the fishing and was it called the fishing and the golf club? Oh, what a place to just go and relax. And when you see that golf hole, little par three, it's only 120 yards or whatever, and it is just simply stunning.
And you've probably got the best tour guide for Irish golf as well, really, with Paul by his side. I mean, there's probably not many golf courses through his amateur days and professional days that he hasn't played over there.
Yeah, quite right. He's played, he knows every blade of grass of that country, of both countries. And his passion for the game is just infectious. So, yeah, I mean, the only disappointing thing about that series is we shot it in lockdown. So if you can imagine, we travelled the length and breadth of Ireland without any pubs or restaurants open. I had a very unhappy film crew who still haven't let me off. But what you do get is obviously empty, dramatic golf courses, which we won't get in Portugal because they were jam-packed.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. It's been awesome talking to you about the series. As he said, you can catch it on Sky On Demand, but you can also go to golfsgreatestholes.com as well, and all of the videos are on there for you to watch. So yeah, I recommend you do it because you'll see golf courses you've never seen before and maybe rekindle a bit of a love for some that you've forgotten about. So yeah, get on there, have a bit of a look. But yeah, Chris, thank you so much for taking your time out to talk to us today.
Brilliant. Thank you.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that quick interview that we had with Chris, going through a little bit of what he's been doing with Paul McGinley in both series, but also chatting a little bit of Strictly Come Dancing as well, because it's a bit of a guilty pleasure of mine, if I'm honest. But yeah, Matt, we've got another week ahead of us of golf. What are you doing?
So I won't do anything now until Thursday morning, I think. So I've got a game Thursday morning, but then I've actually got my next big event on Sunday, which is the Coronation Cup at Felixstowe Golf Club. It's a Suffolk County Order of Merit event. It's a course I know pretty well. It's a course I always feel like I'm going to score well round. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays, because obviously it's a links course. But with the weather that we've had, I've never seen the golf courses so green this time of year down in this part of the country. So it'd be interesting to see how that's playing on Sunday. So I've got 36 holes there, which I am thoroughly looking forward to. And that's it. And a game Saturday, as usual. But all eyes on Sunday. Spectators, welcome.
Very, very good. And we can't finish this week without our weekly check-in on Matt Lockwood and see how he's getting on. Can you fill us in? Has he qualified for this Pinder Trophy yet or not?
Right. Drum roll. No, he hasn't. So in his defence, right, he's absolutely getting pelters now, left, right and centre at this golf club.
Good.
One of our friends, who funnily enough, I actually played golf with tonight, was driving along the road the other day and he saw a road called Pinder Gardens or Pinder Crescent. And he said he actually stopped, turned the car around, got out with the hazards on and run over to take a picture of the road sign to send it to me. But in his defence, he's been away and he did ask for a pass this week because he's been away with his family down in Cornwall. So we kind of have to give him a little bit of leeway this week because he's been away. So
good job we haven't mentioned him then.
So good job we haven't mentioned him. But I know so many people are tuning in every week now just to, you know, just Pinder watch. That's what we're after.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. I've actually played golf a little bit in the last week or so, more than I have done a little bit, and played pretty rubbish, if I'm honest. So I've got another tournament next week, 36 hole at Howley, Yorkshire Open. We'll chat again before then, but I really need to put my finger out and play.
Home advantage.
Yeah, I actually haven't played at Howley for quite a long time. Probably, I don't know, it's probably about March last time I played Howley, I reckon. So yeah, we'll see how we get on there, but it can't be as bad as I've played in the last 7 days, so fingers crossed for a decent performance. But yeah, until next week, hopefully you've enjoyed that. Me and Matt will be back again next Monday and having a bit of a chat about what's gone on in the world of golf, but also what we're doing as well. Thank you for listening and speak to you very soon.